Thank you, everyone, for joining us. This is Thursday, July 1st, 2021. This is Dr. Will Tuttle, and I'm delighted to be with you on this auspicious day. Thank you all for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here and join us for our World Peace Circle satsang, and to come into our hearts and into the silence together and connect with the eternal dimension of consciousness, with our true nature, and remember the bigger picture and get in touch with that perhaps. So thank you, each and every one of you, for being here and for contributing to the energy field of our gathering. Quite a few of us are joining by phone, and there will be some people that will just be listening later. So I'll be just addressing everybody in this. And usually we do a meditation in the beginning and then a reading. I've been doing readings from the Dhammapada, which is an ancient Buddhist text, and I actually really like it. So they're short, but I think they have a lot of vegan substance to them. And then we open it up for questions at the end, and we try to keep this really to 1 hour, not longer than 1 hour. All right, so I'll go ahead and get started. So I think for this beginning part, we are doing a meditation, so feel free to do however you'd like in terms of your sound and your screen. I mean, I think it's best if we're all muted for this, actually. Which I think we are. Press star 6 at some, if you want to unmute at some point. But this is a meditation we can do together, and you might find it easier to turn off your camera, but you don't have to. It's really up to you. I'll leave mine on. And I have it set up again at the piano. I don't remember if I did last time or not, but I was having trouble with my computer for about a month. And so I couldn't. But I'm back at the piano, so I'll try some accompaniment. All right, so we'll begin, and let's just take a moment as we start our satsang, which is, as you all know, I think a time of connecting with community. Satsang, sat meaning truth, or righteousness, I guess, is one of the things it means. Satya means truth, and sang is the short root word of Sangha, which means community. So this is a community of truth seekers, or a community of people who are trying to live according to the Dharma, or the way the universe functions, in harmony with that, not in violation of it, which can be very difficult to do in a society that seems to be organized in violation of many of the principles that the world's great wisdom traditions have recognized as being foundational for happiness, for peace, and for freedom. So satsang is a time to honor the connection that we have with each other and with the eternal dimension of consciousness that is our true nature, and with the teachings that connect us with the wisdom. These are the essence, in many ways, of the foundation that we have for awakening and for healing and for contributing to a more enlightened society. So I'll go ahead and begin the meditation now. Let's become aware now of our breathing, of each inhalation, just breathing together, and letting go with every exhalation. Letting go into this precious moment and giving thanks for this precious opportunity that we have to be together, giving thanks for all of the auspicious dimensions of life, of being, that have brought us to this moment. Giving thanks for the spiritual teachings in our life that have brought us to this point. Giving thanks for all of the teachers in our life who, by their example or by their presence, have helped to illuminate a path toward greater wisdom in our life. Giving thanks for the cultural situation that exists right now that allows us to connect in this way. Across the many miles that separate the outer physical forms. Giving thanks also to ourselves, to this beautiful being that we are. Magnificent expression of life, and all of the efforts that this being has been making in this lifetime to shine the light of love and kindness and compassion into the world, generosity and creativity, to share the adventure with others. So we give thanks now for our life, and we give thanks for this capacity that we have to savor the moments of our life. And we take a moment to connect with this idea that we are born in many ways to savor the majesty and beauty that we see all around us here on this earth, and in the human beings and in the animals, in the whole celebration of life here, to savor our moments. To savor the fragrance of strawberries and apricots, of flowers, of the ocean, the sounds of breezes, of mockingbirds and of water and a stream of children laughing. And the great power that we have to savor the sights of beauty, of people holding hands. Protecting animals and seeing the beauty of the geese as they fly overhead. And the stars at night. All the tastes that we can savor, roasted sesame seeds, fresh grapes, and the ability to savor physical touch, the warmth of the sun, the refreshing coolness of the lake, the caress of someone we love and care for. We extend this capacity to savor to all living beings. Knowing that birds and so many other animals also savor their lives, savor their freedom, their relationships, that their lives are savored by the infinite intelligence that is the source of all life. This infinite life that savors all of our lives. Abiding now in our true home, which is this present moment, the only moment that is holy and where we can savor the beauty of not only what we take in with our outer senses, but the beauty that we can apprehend with our inner senses. The beauty of being aware. To emerge in our heart, a feeling of appreciation for our life, and for everyone in our life, and for everyone who has contributed to bringing us to where we are right now. Even if at the time it seemed to be difficult, all contribute to this moment. And we give thanks also for this precious opportunity of a human birth to deepen our wisdom and our compassion, our understanding of ourselves and others, knowing we are completely interconnected with all expressions of life. And whatever we sow through our body, speech, and mind flows out and back to awaken us and to contribute as a blessing to others. Every inhalation we engender in our heart the feeling of loving kindness. The yearning that others be happy and have all the causes of happiness. With every exhalation, we allow this feeling of loving kindness to radiate from our heart, filling the entire world with the light of love and goodwill and benevolence, excluding no one from our loving kindness, sending this love equally to every being, just as the sun shines without favoritism, and the clouds rain upon every field and flower, so our love flows forth in all directions for all living beings. May all beings be happy. And we allow our heart to fill with compassion with every inhalation we engender. The feeling of compassion in our heart, the yearning that others be free of suffering and free of all the causes of suffering, and with every exhalation, we allow this feeling of compassion to radiate from our heart, filling the entire world with the light of compassion, knowing that compassion always encircles the earth for all living beings everywhere. The compassion in our hearts is the yearning not only that others be free from suffering, but it is also the yearning to act, to do our best, to help relieve the suffering of others, to engage with the world, with all of our inner resources and abilities, talents, with all our heart, to bring loving kindness and to reduce as best we can the causes of suffering and delusion. In ourselves and in all of our relations. And now with every inhalation, we engender in our heart the feeling of joy. Great joy that needs no reasons in the outer world. The joy of being. Abiding in our true home, the eternal, ever-bubbling spring of joy that is our true nature. Abiding in joy, the joy of being, the joy of the beauty always unfolding around us, that we see in the veins of the leaves, in the petals of the flowers, in the beauty of the little eggs and insects. And we allow the joy in our hearts to flow forth and fill the whole world with the truth of infinite joy, abiding in joy, our true home. With every inhalation now, we engender in our heart the feeling of peace and harmony. This is a natural peace and harmony that are ever present in our true nature, beyond whatever is happening in the outer world. We are always at peace. We are always at home. What we are was never born. What we are will never die. What we are shines with eternal life, with love, compassion, and joy, with freedom and wisdom and truth. And so we see now our heart opening, and we feel peace emanating from our heart into every cell of our being, bringing healing and harmony into every cell of our being, to every system within our physical body, in every dimension of our consciousness. We see love, compassion and joy, peace, creativity and truth permeating every dimension of our affairs and flowing into all of our relations. We see the entire earth bathed in the light of peace, the truth of peace, the truth of abundance, the truth of joy, the truth of freedom, the truth of eternal life, of unity. Breathing now into the infinite space of our own consciousness, the freedom within which we always function. Breathing together now in silence. Love, in compassion, in joy, in peace. In gratitude for each other, for the capacity that we have for awareness, to savor the precious beauty that we experience in this brief adventure on this beautiful earth. May all beings be happy. May all beings be free. May we continue working together to help build a more enlightened society, a world based on the truth of ahimsa, of compassion, of loving kindness, of unity, of abundance, of radiant health, of eternal life, of spiritual truth, and we give thanks knowing that we are part of the awakening of humanity that is so much present during this powerful time. In our year 2021, through the power and presence of the infinite spirit of truth, we give thanks, knowing this is so And so it is. Okay, well, thank you all for joining us. We have a few more people that have come in since the beginning of the meditation, and it's great to see you're here. I can see people from all over the United States and Europe as well in the middle of the night. So I really appreciate your joining us. So I'd like to maybe just give a short reading. And then we'll open it up for any comments or questions anyone may have here at the end. So this reading, I'll just continue on. We're just doing one chapter after the other. So this is the one, it's called The Arahant, number 7, in Dhammapada, which is one of the foundational texts of the Buddhist tradition. And I think it's a very universal kind of a teaching. So I'll read it, maybe give a brief commentary, and we can perhaps see how these words can help guide us or be signposts or beacons in our daily life. So the Arahant, Arahant is a someone who's in the Theravadin tradition of Buddhism is the ideal for attaining inner peace and clarity. The someone on the path of becoming enlightened, basically, is close to reaching nirvana. It's different from the bodhisattva, which came later in the Mahayana tradition, who gives their life for all beings. The arhat is enlightened. Really for all beings too, actually. But so the idea here, this is he's talking about someone who's very advanced spiritually in this chapter. So this is how it goes. For someone at the journey's end, freed of sorrow, liberated in all ways, released from all bonds, no fever exists. So that's kind of laying the foundation for the arahant. Someone at the end of the journey. So the idea, of course, in Buddhism is that what we are is consciousness, and we take thousands and thousands and millions of different incarnations. They even say in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition that everyone we ever meet in our life at some point has been our mother, and we have been their mother. So we should always feel great love and respect for everyone we meet. And that doesn't only include humans, that includes animals as well. It's been going on a long time, and is the idea that they're giving here. But this is someone now whose mind has become so clear and luminous that it's no longer filled with delusion and grasping, and which is what kind of keeps the samsaric wheel going and keeps us incarnating to learn our lessons. Kind of like Groundhog Day, you know, you just keep coming back till you get it right. And so freed from sorrow, liberated in all ways, released from all bonds, no fever exists. That's an interesting word. You might think it would be no fear exists. That's maybe part of it. No fever exists. No overheated state of mind. The mindful apply themselves. They don't amuse themselves in any abode. Like swans flying from a lake, they abandon home after home. That's an interesting point. So they don't amuse themselves in any abode. Like swans flying from a lake, they abandon home after home. Again, I just maybe mentioned this. The idea is that we as human beings, we tend to be habits of, we tend to be creatures of habit, and we tend to want to be comfortable all the time and want people to do what we want them to do. And so that's home, is this idea of sort of creating some kind of a concrete, separate place, and make ourselves into a concrete self. And the whole idea here is you've got to just keep abandoning that. That's what real generosity is. It's just giving it up, letting go, letting go, letting go, and letting go some more. There's an old saying, the Buddha, how'd it go? Someone came and wanted the teaching from him, and so he said, and he was carrying these two bundles, and Buddha looked at his left hand and said, well, first, you have to drop that. So the guy dropped it. And then he looked at his other hand and he said, we have to drop that too. So he dropped that. And then the Buddha said, now drop it. I shouldn't laugh. But anyway. Because it's like letting go of even the self that thinks he or she is letting go. Like the path of birds in the sky, it is hard to trace the path of those who do not hoard, who are judicious with their food, and whose field is the freedom of emptiness and signlessness. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, I don't know how someone could create something so poetic and magnificent. That's like the path of birds in the sky. It is hard to trace the path of those who do not hoard, who are judicious with their food, and whose field is the freedom of emptiness and signlessness. So, there's, again, all these overtones. You've probably heard the great one by Rumi, which everybody says. I love it. He says, beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there's a field. I will meet you there. I think that's the same field in a sense, this field of emptiness and signlessness, the field of when the mind is liberated from seeing other living beings as separate and objects to be used and manipulated. And I think it's so interesting that he writes in here, whoever this came, the Buddha supposedly said this, that we're free like birds in the sky without leaving any tracks when we don't hoard, right, try to hang on to things. And when we're judicious with our food, I mean, that's a real vegan statement, right? It's a good way of looking at we don't have to say we're vegans. We just say, well, we're judicious with our food. We're just judicious. And judicious is a good word, right? I mean, justice. Justice has all these overtones of justice, compassion for animals, kindness, freedom, justice, being judicious, being mindful, being aware. I mean, gosh, we could start a whole new movement with that. Being judicious with food. And of course, food is not just the food that we're eating. Food is what we're reading. It's our relationships. It's our thoughts, our feelings. Everything we consume is food. So we're judicious with our food, aren't we? Like the path of birds in the sky, it is hard to trace the path of those who have destroyed their toxins, who are unattached to food, and whose field is the freedom of emptiness and signlessness. It's very similar to the previous stanza, and he repeats the food. This time, we're unattached to food. So this is, again, not just physical food, of course, but to always wanting something, right? We're always looking at our iPhone to see what we can learn or what we can say to somebody. And very powerful, I think, this idea of destroying toxins. This, in many ways, is kind of the key to everything, being able to destroy the toxins, because the toxins, of course, accumulate not only in food and water and the air we're breathing and so forth in our physical body, but he's also, back then, of course, everything was organic. So they're talking about the toxins. Wasn't that great? I mean, back then there wasn't the 180,000 chemicals spewed into the environment. But there was still a problem with toxins, anger, fear, jealousy, greed, pride, so forth. Even the gods cherish those who are without toxins, who have abandoned conceit, and whose senses are calm. like horses well tamed by a charioteer. This is a common theme. You know, the idea is that our physical body and our mind is something to be tamed. That's one of the first stages, to tame the mind. You've heard this, right? The mind is like a monkey. It's just jumping around and causing all kinds of misery. And in other chapters, he talks about how there's no greater enemy to anyone than our own mind if it's not well tamed. Our thoughts, if we're indulging in thoughts of using others, of anger and so forth, not only is that going to eventually lead to actions that are probably harmful, but also our body creates all these, like a little pharmacy, right? We're always creating substances within our body that affect our physical body and our physical health. And so this is something that's very important to remember, that as we just dwell on joy and freedom and gratitude and savor the beauty around us, our whole body is creating health and is being filled with the idea, each cell really in our body is being filled with the idea that it's important to do the work here, because there's a being that is using this physical body in order to fulfill a purpose on this earth. What greater purpose is there than to savor the beauty of this creation all around us and to contribute to the beauty and to be creative and to be loving? So like horses well tamed by a charioteer, free from toxins. For a person who, like the earth, is untroubled like the earth. Wow. I wonder if earth is still untroubled in all that we're going through now. Who is well practiced, who is like a pillar of Indra. Indra was the chief of all the gods. Who is like a lake without mud. There is no more wandering. So that's the basic idea. When our mind is clear, the toxins have now been released and dissolved, the mud has settled, and the clarity is in our mind, then we're not wandering anymore. Wandering, of course, means wandering in samsara, wandering from lifetime to lifetime, creating more karma, in a sense, creating more suffering based on delusion. So the idea is we live each moment with full awareness. Calm in mind, speech, and action, and released through right understanding, such a person is fully at peace. As you may remember, this one of the foundational teachings in Buddhism is the Eightfold Path. And the very first fold in the Eightfold Path is right understanding. So when we're calm in body, speech, and mind, we are released through right understanding. And right understanding is really freedom from ignorance, that we are a fundamentally separate self. That's the basic idea. That as long as I'm under the delusion that I'm basically separate from everything I'm seeing, then there's fear and I'm trying to get things and trying to push away and so forth. And the whole world becomes filled with conflict and power struggles and manipulation and violence. So the only way to end that ultimately is, according to these teachings, is each one of us to awaken and calm our body, speech, and mind, attain right understanding, see with eyes of loving kindness, and be fully at peace. The person who has gone beyond faith knows the unmade, has severed the link, destroyed the potential for rebirth, and eliminated clinging, is the ultimate person. So we're getting right to the end here of this section about the arhat. But he's talking about the ultimate person, essentially, which is all of us, each and every one of us, has the capacity to go. I mean, think, what is he saying? He has gone beyond faith. That's interesting, I think, right? In other words, faith is very often predicated on the idea that we're just trusting. We don't know ourselves, but we're hoping and trusting. So going beyond faith and actually real, you know, direct realization of the truth within our mind field knowing the unmade. So in other words, this is a fundamental theme, that there's a world that is made, right? This is the world of appearances all around us. It's like a dream. In the middle of the night, you know, if we're dreaming, we wake up from the dream. We say, oh, that was just a dream. It was just made by my consciousness. So to understand the unmade, to understand the pure potential out of which this world emerges, is liberation. In village, in forest, in lowland, in highland, delightful is the place where the Arahant dwells. So wherever you are, under whatever situation, whether you're in the middle of the city, in the forest, down in the swamp, up on the mountain peak, wherever you go, it's delightful. I mean, if you're an Arhant, is what he's saying here. The idea, and I guess we all know this, right? I mean, I write about this in the World Peace Diet, that we can be in the most beautiful paradise place. I've experienced this myself, actually, being in Hawaii or some beautiful place. But if I'm upset about something, it's like I can't really appreciate it. And I can be in a place that's outwardly not that great, but if I'm in joy, it's a beautiful place. It's a Buddha realm, as they would say. And this is the last little stanza. Delightful are forests where the public does not delight, where the passion-free delight, not seeking sensual pleasure. Delightful are forests where the public does not delight. There the passion-free delight, not seeking sensual pleasure. I mean, that's very complex, because usually we think that any kind of delight that we're going to experience must come from some kind of sensual pleasure, right? Some kind of sense input that gives us, wow, that tasted so good, that looked so beautiful, that felt so great, oh, I accomplished that, you know, whatever it is. But he's saying here, the real delight comes in these forests where there's nobody around. In a sense, just within the solitude of our own being. And the public doesn't delight in this. So there's this definite sense that the masses probably are not ready to understand this at this point. But if we're willing to go beyond sensual pleasure, we'll find a far greater fulfillment. And again, this is completely contrary to our society, which is teaching us that our worth and our happiness comes from consuming, from buying, from achieving, accumulating, all these things. And this is a direct questioning of all those ideas. So thank you all for joining in the reading of the Dhammapada, and I give thanks for the writing of this, the translation down through 2,500 years ago. You know, it's so interesting because we live in a world today where we think that because of our great technology, we're so much happier and so much wiser and so much more fulfilled than people 2,500 years ago could ever have been, right? I mean, think of that. They didn't have refrigerators. They didn't have telephones. They didn't have cars. They if it was cold, it was cold. If it was hot, it was hot. I mean, they couldn't. And yet, here they are, bringing wisdom to us that I haven't seen wisdom like that really very often coming from people born in this society. So I think the idea of progress. I remember I used to think this quite a bit when I was younger. We had this idea of progression and regression, right? Progress, sometimes we think we're going forward, we're making progress. And then other people say, just because you have more cell phone towers and you have more medical procedures and protocols, that isn't necessarily progress. So that could be a regression. That could be going backwards. And so it's hard. I think it depends on our perspective, whether it's progress or regression. And I coined the word gress, just gress, G-R-E-S-S. You know, I don't know if it's progress or regress. It's just gress. We're going along. You know, I'm not sure. Or transgress. I mean, there's all these different words, but it's just gressing. We're gressing along, and try not to be too aggressive in our gressing, I guess is the idea. to have compassion and kindness, and to question all the official narratives in our society, because I think we have to realize that, I think probably if you're on this call, you've realized that animal agriculture and the mentality of exclusion and domination and exploitation of the weak by the strong pervades every institution in our society and pretty much our education and religious and scientific and governmental and economic systems that in many ways have colonized our minds. So we're talking about really a complete transformation of our consciousness. And that's why I love these ancient texts, because in many ways they are able very clearly to point to some of this wisdom. So if anyone has, please press the *6 if you have a question or comment. We have some time left here if you have a comment or question or just want to share something. And I'd like to, again, just reemphasize that I think it's really something to be celebrated that we have this opportunity right now to share this way and to enjoy, you know, in a sense, savor, not enjoy like sense pleasure way, but to savor this opportunity and the fact that we can create a sangha, a community that is based on compassion for animals as a foundation and on questioning official narratives of exploitation and then to transforming ourselves so that we are worthy of this beautiful earth, worthy of these beautiful animals who don't defend themselves from us. How can we be worthy of a world of peace and freedom if we're still harming so many other weak and defenseless beings? So anyone have a hand up there? And we don't have to. Sometimes it's best just to enjoy being together. And there's an old saying in Zen: as soon as I open my mouth, evil springs forth. And what he's pointing to is this idea that truth is ultimately non-communicable in verbal conceptual trappings. No one can tell someone else what a strawberry tastes like if they haven't tasted a strawberry. And so ultimately, as soon as we open our mouths and try to explain and say it's like this and it's not like this, we're already missed the mark. So it's in the Zen tradition, there's all kinds of teachings that are meant to completely wipe out any clinging to anything at all conceptually, because the idea is that the conceptual mind in many ways creates its own prison. So part of what I like to do with these, with my own life and actually, and I think a little bit with these first Thursday meetings is provide some concepts, some ideas, but also always be reminded that love and awareness and awakening and healing really in many ways happen in the realm beyond our rational concepts, where our intuition goes. And our intuition doesn't need thoughts. Our intuition knows directly. So we have a hand from Andy. Yes, Andy. Go ahead. I notice you have a little companion there, a really cute one.
I'm house sitting for a hamster and a cat.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I think it's beautiful.
Thank you. Glad you enjoyed her. So I don't know if I'm just, not thinking lately of the right responses or ways to react, but I ran into an old acquaintance just yesterday, and he was walking down the street. We hadn't seen each other for a long time, and he was part of a grief support group, and, you know, where typically they would be compassionate people and understanding. And so we're smiling, and we're approaching each other. We're about to say hello, and then he stops, and he's like, "Oh, wait, have you been vaccinated?" And I said, no. And he's like, oh, I better stay back here then. So of course we got into a conversation and I thought I was being very nice, very diplomatic, and just saying I've actually been educating on, the opposite and more about vaccines and, learning from all these doctors, things like that. And so, of course, he accuses me of being a conspiracy theorist and selfish and not caring and all this stuff. And he's got to be about my age in his 60s and things like that. So I don't. Growing up in the same area. And then so I brought up George Carlin, and he was familiar with George Carlin. Now, George Carlin was very awake and didn't support either party, Democrat or Republican. And, I try to behave and leave it very kindly. And I said, this is what I think. People should just talk to each other and stop following the news. And I couldn't get through. So in situations like that, or in situations where people are just, promoting their meat kind of thing and against veganism, how do you react with people like these? Do you still try to continue the conversation? Do you try to just let it go? Do you try to just get along? I mean, what's an ideal way to deal with insanity?
Right. Thanks, Andy. That's a great question. And, I think there isn't really a cookie cutter response or, just one template. I think, every situation is unique. And I think it'll depend on, your relationship with the person and the energy of the interaction and 10,000 things. So I think, the best thing is to try to stay in the moment and to, your own example, be the message you'd like to give. And it can be challenging. I know, because I think the situation that we're in today, is a massive polarization. Society's been polarized in many ways, but it's polarizing much more. And there's a lot of, what the CIA calls a PSYOP, PSYOP happening where, people who, especially who really get addicted to the mainstream media, and I think it's very addictive. Fear, fear is addictive. People get addicted to horror movies, and just I never liked horror movies. I think I saw one, and I said I'm never going to see another one. I hate some kind of thing that just makes this pointless fear. I hate that. I mean, why should I put my mind into a ridiculous situation of watching such a ridiculous thing? But I think it's like anything. There's an addiction that happens. And so, it's kind of a rush that people get. And so for the last, for many decades, there's been a push to get people addicted to fear. And so something, I think the best thing is always what I refer to as satyagraha, which is truth power. So just to speak for myself, don't say anything about the other person, to say, I realized that, when I was, earlier in my life, I would get, to a point where I would sometimes maybe watch television, and I just saw that there's so much fear being generated through that medium. And, I got kind of trapped myself, and I'm so glad I'm free of that now. I never watch TV. I stay out of that whole thing. And I've realized personally that it's just very unhealthy and very, and I think it's very, I found it for myself very addictive, and I'm so glad I'm free of that now, and just say, and just kind of let go and not try to change them, but just, cause I think it's a situation you're not going to be able to change. I don't think you can get through to people very easily anymore on a lot of these things, because, it's really very taken hold at a very deep level, the fear. And the whole narrative of being attacked by invisible forces like bacteria and so forth. So that narrative is very ingrained through many decades. They've been working a long time to bring that whole thing to fruition. And so it takes quite a bit of effort, I think, to stay free and to keep our minds clear. And that's why I think meditation is so important, and questioning the colonization process that's happened to all of us through the media, through education, through just growing up, through our own parents. You know, we've all been really conditioned to trust authorities that don't have our best interests at heart, and the corruption is rampant. So it's very important. So I think, you know, you just send them love. I think that's really important, because as we all know, the opposite energy of fear really is fearlessness, loving kindness, gratitude. And when you're an example of that, that can plant a seed, and maybe that'll help that person. And, you know, but I think it's important to not tell them that they have to change, or they should learn or whatever, because they'll just really fight back. And gets my
thank friend. You. Thank you for that reminder. I couldn't think. I thought I was being nice, but that sounds perfect. I need to remember that in both situations. So thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome, Andy. Thank you. All right. So, yeah, I know. Yeah, we're living, of course, I've said it before, even here, on very tumultuous times, very challenging times, very critical times. And it's more important than ever, I think, to remember these ancient wisdom teachings and to remember that what we are is not our physical body. You know, that's critical. I wonder if there was I just saw there's a question how our home meditation group is going. Yeah, every Monday we have a meditation in our living room here, which we turn into like a little meditation room. It's going great. Yeah, thanks for asking. Somebody's asking that. Oh, Susan, I guess. But anyway, so just that final point. I know we have to kind of wrap it up here, but that final point I was just making, that we're living in such critical times, and to remember, to try to have the big picture, the big, big picture. Remember when my brother and I went on that walk, we walked across, from Massachusetts, we're going to walk across to California. But we were just, even back then, you know, I was just meditating every day that I'm not this body. And that what am I? I was asking the question, but what am I? What am I? What am I? And going deeper and deeper with that question. And I had experiences on that walk when we were in kind of dangerous situations sometimes. And it really helped to remember that I'm not my body. You know, I remember, you know, like one time we were where we shouldn't be, and we were, we had to go out into this, it was a church, and everybody, we were all, we were in the back, and all these people came in, and they were having a service. This was in the hills of West Virginia. And it was like, we didn't want them, we knew they were, if we stayed there, they would discover us, and they would probably call the police, and it'd be a big, huge mess. So we didn't know what to do, and then I thought, we should just go out there, just go out and be with the people. And then we were like, oh man, but that's going to be, you know, they're going to be so shocked, and, you know, these hippies walking into their thing. This is not even back in the, I mean, a whole different culture. But anyway, then I suddenly got this, I said, but Ed, wait a minute. We don't have to worry. We're not our bodies. What are we worried about? You know, we're not our bodies. I mean, they can't do anything to us. And I remember, and he said, yeah, you're right. I forgot. Okay, never mind. We don't have to worry. And and it was cool because we just walked out, and I remember, it's kind of like I floated above my body. I was just watching these two guys walking out, me, Ed and me, and that just took all the edge off. It was like everybody looked at us. He said, oh, okay, you want to sing a hymn with us? And they were friendly and nice. I mean, I think to the degree that we can relax this grip that keeps us in the prison of being this fundamentally separate self that is just born and will die, this body, and realize that we are what makes this thing possible, and we are undamageable, and we always remember that and see that in others as well. That's how we get through this, because this whole matrix, in a sense, on this planet is based on turning animals into commodities that are bought and sold by the pound, and pretty much us the same thing. It's all based on this demonic lie of materialism that we're just bodies and harming the body and using the body and all these things. So enslaving bodies. So we are not the body. And to understand that, we're just here for a few years functioning through a physical vehicle that's our sacred temple. Take, you know, treat it with care, but it's not who we are. And just find out, each one of us, you know, find out what you are. That's something that only you can do. Only each one of us can do that. Don't take anything for an answer. Don't take, you know, when he says to keep leaving home, that's really what he's saying. Like the geese that keep leaving the lake, whatever you settle on, you think, oh, that's who I am. Like, question that, because that's not it. It's much, 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 much deeper than that. All right. Well, much love to all of you. I really appreciate your joining us for this time of meditation. And Madeline's right here. She sends her love also. And we look forward to those of you who are in our World Peace Diet Circle. We have the third Thursday call. And next week, next month, the first Thursday of August, we will see you again. So, oh, here she is, smiling along.
Hello, everybody. Hello.
Great.
So nice to see you all.
Thanks, Mijo. All right, so let's just close with our prayer, the prayer circle. There's Judy. that we say, again, it's compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Let's just say that three times in closing. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere. Compassion encircles the earth for all beings everywhere.
Compassion encircles the earth
for all
beings everywhere.
Oh, great. Well done. Thank you very much. Much love to you all. And go forth and multiply the message of love and compassion. We'll see you later. Stay in touch. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Will.
Thank
Thanks,
you.
Will.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Will.